Chapter 36. I will. Apostrophe, don't encourage him to ask. Don't understand him, if he does ask. Don't give it to him. Save him and spare him that, and you will be able to think better of him. ... Clennam said not very plainly, seeing those tears glistening in her anxious eyes, that her wish should be sacred with him. You don't know what he is, ... she said. You don't know what he really is. How can you, seeing him there all at once, dear love, and not gradually, as I have done? You have been so good to us, so delicately and truly good, that I want him to be better in your eyes than in anybody's. And I cannot bear to think, ... cried little Dorrit, covering her tears with her hands, I cannot bear to think that you of all the world should see him in his only moments of degradation. ... ... said Clennam, do not be so distressed. Pray, little Dorrit. This is quite understood now. ... Thank you, sir. Thank you. I have tried very much to keep myself from saying this. I have thought about it, days and nights. But when I knew for certain you were coming again, I made up my mind to speak to you. Not because I am ashamed of him, ... she dried her tears quickly, but because I know him better than anyone does, and love him, and am proud of him. ... Relieved of this weight, little Dorrit was nervously anxious to be gone. Maggie being broad awake, and in the act of distantly gloating over the fruit, and cakes with chuckles of anticipation, Clennam made the best diversion in his power, by pouring her out a glass of wine, which she drank in a series of loud smacks, putting her hand upon her windpipe after every one, and saying, breathless, with her eyes in a prominent state, oh, ain't it delicious? Ain't it hospitally? ... When she had finished the wine and these encomiums, he charged her to load her basket, she was never without her basket, with every eatable thing upon the table, and to take especial care to leave no scrap behind. Maggie's pleasure in doing this and her little mother's pleasure in seeing Maggie pleased, was as good a turn as circumstances could have given to the late conversation. But the gates will have been locked long ago, ... said Clennam, suddenly remembering it. Where are you going? ... I am going to Maggie's lodging, ... answered little Dorrit. I shall be quite safe, quite well taken care of. ... I must accompany you there, ... said Clennam, I cannot let you go alone. ... Yes, pray leave us to go there by ourselves. Pray do. ... begged little Dorrit. She was so earnest in the petition, that Clennam felt a delicacy in obtruding himself upon her. The rather, because he could well understand that Maggie's lodging was of the obscurest sort. Come, Maggie, ... said little Dorrit cheerily, we shall do very well, we know the way by this time, Maggie? ... yes, little mother. We know the way, ... chuckled Maggie. And away they went. Little Dorrit turned at the door to say, God bless you. ... She said it very softly, but perhaps she may have been as audible above, who knows, as a whole cathedral choir. Arthur Clennam suffered them to pass the corner of the street, before he followed at a distance, not with any idea of encroaching a second time on little Dorrit's privacy, but to satisfy his mind, by seeing her secure in the neighborhood to which she was accustomed. So diminutive she looked, so fragile and defenseless against the bleak damp weather, flitting along in the shuffling shadow of her charge, that he felt, in his compassion, and in his habit of considering her a child apart from the rest of the rough world, as if he would have been glad to take her up in his arms, and carry her to her journey's end. In course of time she came into the leading thoroughfare where the Marshalsea was, and then he saw them slacken their pace, and soon turn down a by-street. He stopped, felt that he had no right to go further, and slowly left them. He had no suspicion that they ran any risk of being houseless until morning, had no idea of the truth until long, long afterwards. But, said little Dorrit, when they stopped at a poor dwelling all in darkness, and heard no sound on listening at the door. Now, this is a good lodging for you, Maggie, and we must not give offense. Consequently, we will only knock twice, and not very loud. And if we cannot wake them so, we must walk about till day. Once, little Dorrit knocked with a careful hand, and listened. Twice, little Dorrit knocked with a careful hand, and listened. All was close and still. Maggie, we must do the best we can, my dear. We must be patient, and wait for day. It was a chill dark night, with a damp wind blowing, when they came out into the leading street again, and heard the clocks strike 1:30. In only 5 hours and a half, said little Dorrit, we shall be able to go home. To speak of home, and to go, and look at it, it being so near, was a natural sequence. They went to the closed gate, and peeped through into the courtyard. I hope he is sound asleep, said little Dorrit, kissing one of the bars, and does not miss me. The gate was so familiar, and so like a companion, that they put down Maggie's basket in a corner, to serve for a seat, and keeping close together, rested there for some time. While the street was empty and silent, little Dorrit was not afraid. But when she heard a footstep at a distance, or saw a moving shadow among the street lamps, she was startled, and whispered, Maggie, I see someone. Come away. Maggie would then wake up more or less fretfully, and they would wander about a little, and come back again. As long as eating was a novelty and an amusement, Maggie kept up pretty well. But that period going by, she became querulous about the cold, and shivered and whimpered. It will soon be over, dear, said little Dorrit patiently. Oh, it's all very fine for you, little mother, returned Maggie, but I'm a poor thing, only 10 years old. At last, in the dead of the night, when the street was very still indeed, little Dorrit laid the heavy head upon her bosom, and soothed her to sleep. And thus she sat at the gate, as it were alone, looking up at the stars, and seeing the clouds pass over them in their wild flight, which was the dance at little Dorrit's party. If it really was a party, she thought once, as she sat there. If it was light, and warm and beautiful, and it was our house, and my poor dear was its master, and had never been inside these walls. And if Mr. Clennam was one of our visitors, and we were dancing to delightful music, and were all as gay and light-hearted as ever we could be. I wonder, such a vista of wonder opened out before her, that she sat looking up at the stars, quite lost, until Maggie was querulous again, and wanted to get up and walk. 3 o'clock, and 3:30, and they had passed over London Bridge. They had heard the rush of the tide against obstacles, and looked down, awed, through the dark vapor on the river, had seen little spots of lighted water, where the bridge lamps were reflected, shining like demon eyes, with a terrible fascination, in them for guilt and misery. They had shrunk past homeless people, lying coiled up in nooks. They had run from drunkards. They had started from slinking men, whistling, and signing to one another at by corners, or running away at full speed. Though everywhere the leader and the guide, little Dorrit, happy for once in her youthful appearance, feigned to cling to, and rely upon Maggie. And more than once some voice, from among a knot of brawling or prowling figures in their path, had called out to the rest, to let the woman and the child go by. So, the woman and the child had gone by, and gone on, and 5 had sounded from the steeples. They were walking slowly towards the east, already looking for the first pale streak of day, when the woman came after them. What are you doing with the child? She said to Maggie. She was young, far too young to be there, heaven knows, and neither ugly nor wicked looking. She spoke coarsely, but with no naturally coarse voice. There was even something musical in its sound. What are you doing with yourself? Retorted Maggie, for want of a better answer. Can't you see, without my telling you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know as I can, apostrophe, said Maggie. Killing myself. Now I have answered you, answer me. What are you doing with the child? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the supposed child kept her head drooped down, and kept her form close at Maggie's side. Poor thing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the woman. Have you no feeling, that you keep her out in the cruel streets at such a time as this? Have you no eyes, that you don't see how delicate and slender she is? Have you no sense, you don't look as if you had much, that you don't take more pity on this cold and trembling little hand? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she had stepped across to that side, and held the hand between her own two, chafing it. Kiss a poor lost creature, dear, apostrophe, she said, bending her face, and tell me where's she taking you? Apostrophe, little Dora turned towards her. Why, my God! Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said, recoiling, you're a woman. Apostrophe, don't mind that. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said little Dorrit, clasping one of her hands that had suddenly released hers. I am not afraid of you. Apostrophe, then you had better be, apostrophe, she answered. Have you no mother? Apostrophe, no. Apostrophe, no father? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, a very dear one. Apostrophe, go home to him, and be afraid of me. Let me go. Good night. Apostrophe, I must thank you first. Let me speak to you, as if I really were a child. Apostrophe, you can't do it, apostrophe, said the woman. You are kind and innocent, but you can't look at me out of a child's eyes. I never should have touched you, but I thought that you were a child. Apostrophe, and with a strange wild cry, she went away. No day yet in the sky, but there was day in the resounding stones of the streets, in the wagons, carts, and coaches, in the workers going to various occupations, in the opening of early shops, in the traffic at markets, in the stir of the riverside. There was coming day in the flaring lights, with a feebler color in them than they would have had at another time. Coming day in the increased sharpness of the air, and the ghastly dying of the night. They went back again to the gate, intending to wait there now until it should be opened. But the air was so raw and cold that little Dorrit, leading Maggie about in her sleep, kept in motion. Going round by the church, she saw lights there, and the door open, and went up the steps and looked in. Who's that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried a stout old man, who was putting on a nightcap, as if he were going to bed in a vault. It's no one particular, sir, apostrophe, said little Dorrit. Stop! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the man. Let's have a look at you. Apostrophe, this caused her to turn back again in the act of going out, and to present herself and her charge before him. I thought so. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said he. I know you. Apostrophe, we have often seen each other, apostrophe, said little Dorrit, recognizing the sexton, or the beadle, or the verger, or whatever he was, when I have been at church here. Apostrophe, more than that, we've got your birth in our register, you know. You're one of our curiosities. Apostrophe, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said little Dorrit. To be sure. As the child of the by-the-by, how did you get out so early? Apostrophe, apostrophe, we were shut out last night, and are waiting to get in. Apostrophe, you don't mean it? And there's another hour good yet. Come into the vestry. You'll find a fire in the vestry, on account of the painters. I'm waiting for the painters, or I shouldn't be here, you may depend upon it. One of our curiosities, mustn't be cold when we have it in our power, to warm her up comfortable. Come along. Apostrophe, he was a very good old fellow, in his familiar way, and having stirred the vestry fire, he looked round the shelves of registers for a particular volume. Here you are, you see, apostrophe, he said, taking it down and turning the leaves. Here you'll find yourself, as large as life. Amy, daughter of William and Fanny Dorrit. Born, Marshalsea Prison, Parish of St. George. and we tell people that you have lived there without so much as a day's or a night's absence ever since. Is it true? Apostrophe, quite true, till last night. Apostrophe, Lord. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but his surveying her with an admiring gaze suggested something else to him, to wit. I am sorry to see, though, that you are faint and tired. Stay a bit. I'll get some cushions out of the church, and your friend shall lie down before the fire. Don't be afraid of not going in to join your father when the gate opens. I'll call you. Apostrophe, he soon brought in the cushions, and strewed them on the ground. There you are, you see. Again as large as life. Oh, never mind thanking. I've daughters of my own. And though they weren't born in the Marshalsea prison, they might have been, if I had been, in my ways of carrying on, of your father's breed. Stop a bit. I must put something under the cushion for your head. Here's a burial volume. Just the thing. We have got Mrs. Bangham in this book. But what makes these books interesting to most people is not who's in them, but who isn't who's coming, you know, and when. That's the interesting question. Apostrophe, commendingly looking back at the pillow he had improvised, he left them to their hour's repose. Maggie was snoring already, and little Dorrit was soon fast asleep with her head resting on that sealed book of fate, untroubled by its mysterious blank leaves. This was little Dorrit's party. The shame, desertion, wretchedness, and exposure of the great capital, the wet, the cold, the slow hours, and the swift clouds of the dismal night. This was the party from which little Dorrit went home, jaded, in the first gray mist of a rainy morning. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.